97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you. Welcome back on this fifth day of September. Happy you chose to join us this morning on the Mark Cash Morning Show. I'm Mark. That's Kim St. Ange, Carl Middleman. Susan Thomas has got you traffic here in just a couple of minutes. Just a quick reminder, we're coming up on this next week, the 11th. We will be live down in the great city of Eureka, helping the Focus Marine Foundation raise a little bit of money. We'll have the show live down there all morning. Hope you can stop by and see us. Maybe pick up, some swag, or we just love to hang out with you. Be fun.
I hope we have great weather, but it'll be fun nonetheless. I mean, either way, it's going to be a great time.
You know what we're going to have? We're going to have a great breakfast.
That's right.
And Carl Middleman's going to miss it because he'll be in Las Vegas.
Yes.
But that's okay. We'll forgive you, Carl. Sue Thomas is going to be there, though.
She will be.
I'm one of those people where if I know I'm going to breakfast, I'm already thinking about, like, I'm visualizing what I'm going to eat. I know we're a week out or just a little less than a week out. I'm like, I'm eating eggs, bacon, maybe some hash browns.
Biscuits and gravy.
No, a pancake.
The thing I love about Chickenelli's, which is where we'll be live down there, is that they've got their regulars who come in there, right? And they can order things that aren't necessarily on the menu. So if you want a surprise one morning, walk in there and tell them you want the Chief Greg Brown special, because that's what I got the last time.
What is
that? And it's like smothered and covered. I couldn't tell you what all was on it, but it was delicious. So they do things like that for people who are regulars down there. And it's
if you're the
fantastic.
Police chief.
Well, if you're the fire chief in this case.
Sorry, fire chief.
We're looking forward to seeing all those great folks on the 11th. So if you can come down to Eureka, please do. It'll be the morning after the big debate next week, which I'm sure we'll all be talking about. We'll be a little tired from staying up late watching the debate.
I have to stay up and watch it. I know I can't just watch clips the next morning. I have to see it.
Yeah, you'll want to see all of this for sure. We're going to get to more on that for you coming up in a minute. We got former Senator Jim Talent joining us shortly. We got Kim on a Whim coming up here. What are we talking about in Kim on a Whim this morning?
I want to talk about the supposed fallout from the Supreme Court striking, down affirmative action, because supposedly some of these colleges, including a very prominent one here in the St. Louis area, have already seen a somewhat significant decline in the number of black students who have been admitted to the universities.
Well, we'll get to that for you coming up here about 7:45. First, though, I want to get to the shortlist.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
They should be fulfilling their God-given potential, and some part of their big, beautiful brain is concerned about a shooter busting through the door of the classroom. It does not have to be this way.
Yeah, it doesn't. But if Kamala Harris had her way, there would not have been a school resource officer in that school ready to stop the shooting suspect. She would rather have them been undefended. It's unbelievable.
If you let the Trump tax cuts expire, which she wants to do. She wants to terminate them. If you do that, you will suffer the biggest tax increase in history.
Wow, that's because it was one of the biggest tax cuts in history. And yes, the Democratic Party wants those tax cuts to expire. If she wins, your taxes are going up.
Harris-Waltz administration would be a perfect nightmare for free speech.
Wow. Jonathan Turley, the law professor, pointing out that people on the left are looking adoringly to places like Brazil, where they're trying to ban X because they don't like opinions other than their own being expressed. He said that might happen here if they're successful in Brazil.
I have thought deeply about this, and because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I am voting for Kamala Harris.
Wow. That is, of course, Liz Cheney, disgraced former congresswoman there from Wyoming, announcing her endorsement of Kamala Harris. Yes, indeed. And, this is funny because she put out a tweet back in 2019 about how dangerous a Kamala Harris presidency would be. So which is it, I would ask? So here it is, in fact. Yesterday at Duke University, Liz Cheney, former Republican, endorsed a socialist for president of the United States. Son of the former vice president. This shows you just how deeply the hatred runs for Donald Trump in the rhino arm of the Republican Party. The Bushes, the Cheneys, all strongly dislike Donald Trump because he's not going to continue the endless wars and the other things they supported. He's not. But listen to Liz Cheney. This is like when you have to go back and listen to past sound bites from Kamala Harris to find out what she really thinks about issues like the school shooting issue and police officers being allowed in schools. This is what Liz Cheney said in 2020 about Kamala Harris. Go to cut 14, please.
As somebody who is a centrist and in one fell swoop here, he has put somebody on the ticket whose voting record in the Senate is to the left of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. So I think that, you know, the American people are going to look at the substance of this. They're going to look at what she stood for in the past. They're going to look at what she said during the primary election. And it's very clear. She is a radical liberal. She's somebody that has said we ought to spend $32 trillion on Medicare for all. If you look at her record as well in California, she did, in fact, essentially ban gun sales with executive action. And she threatened during the primaries to do the same thing if she's elected.
Does Liz Cheney believe anything she says? Does she believe anything that comes out of her own mouth? Is she that calculating that then she considered this woman to be a major threat to your gun rights, to taxation, to Medicaid, Obamacare for all, whatever, Medicare for all? She believes that she posed all those threats to the American system. But yesterday she came out and said basically the same thing about Donald Trump and endorsed that woman for president of the United States.
I'm a little surprised that she hadn't already endorsed her. And I just don't know how big of a deal this is. And I want to have grace for her because I am somebody who switched their thought. Like, I did not like Donald Trump and then I changed my opinion of him. I still don't like everything he says, but I support him as a candidate. But she was pointing to very specific policies that Kamala Harris stood for at that time.
And still stands for.
So unless Liz Cheney's position has completely changed on those things, which I don't take it that she has, she just has a strong dislike / borderline hatred, it sounds like, for Donald Trump.
Hatred.
That's the reason. And that's really immature of somebody. And just, you're not an educated voter, in my opinion, if you're voting for someone's personality over policy, which is what a lot of people are doing. And I'll admit that part of the reason I voted against Donald Trump initially was for that reason. I acknowledge that. And thankfully, I woke up. I don't know how many people care about this because Liz Cheney is really only featured on what, MSNBC is where we see her all the time. So the people who are seeing her as a regular, they're the ones who were already voting likely for Kamala Harris. You know what I mean?
I don't think it changes anybody's opinion. Adam Kinzinger, same way.
It's not like, I think the RFK endorsement of Donald Trump is way bigger. I think even the Tulsi Gabbard, I think, is not to the level of RFK Jr., but I do think that even is a bigger deal than Liz Cheney endorsing Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I could see that. I just don't know how she could have felt so strongly about these policies and now somehow thinks it's okay if all those things happen that she was warning you about just a few years ago. Just wow. All right. There was a town hall last night. Should have been a debate. Donald Trump showed up. We're going to talk that over with the former Congressman and Senator Jim Talent coming up.
If she won, you're not going to have any fracking in Pennsylvania. You have 500,000 jobs. Think of that. It's your biggest business. And you get a big majority of your income from fracking. And you have somebody that's not going to allow fracking. She's not going to allow it. You can't take the chance. You have no choice. You've got to vote for me. You've got to vote for me. Even if you don't like me, you know, it's. No, but even if you don't like me, you can sit there and say, I can't stand that guy, but there's no way I'm going to vote for her.
We've got Jim Talent joining us this morning, as he does each Thursday morning. Jim, welcome in. How are you?
I'm fine, Mark. Thanks.
Is that a winning argument for Donald Trump? You think you got to vote for me, whether you like me or not?
Yeah. You know, I've been watching him in this campaign, and he has grown substantially as a candidate. He uses humor much more often, self-deprecating sometimes, just as he did, which I think is very good. He pivots to issues better, and I just think he's more disciplined. So his strengths are still his strengths, and his weaknesses. Most candidates, virtually all of them, have both. But I think he's better, and he gave a great answer on fracking. Of course, he handled the border questions well. I knew he would. And I thought his comments on the international situation, which are clearly weighing on his mind. I mean, I think there's a part of him that, you know, I imagine when you've been president, you always say to yourself, what would I have done? And I think he hit on those very, very effectively.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, I saw the debate rules are out for next Tuesday. It's very similar to the Joe Biden debate. No audience, no notes, no consulting with staff in between the two commercial breaks. I think, as Kim pointed out earlier, that really benefited Trump the first time around because he's good off the cuff if he can stay focused, and he doesn't need notes, and Kamala Harris is more likely to need notes.
Yeah, I think the format is fine for him. To those of your listeners who support the president, I mean, I am concerned about the debate, and not because of Trump. I think the Trump campaign has to plan on the assumption that it's going to be as biased a group of moderators as we've ever seen. And I'll just tell you, that presents challenges for a candidate when you're debating effectively the moderators as much or more than your opponents. So I think they have to plan on that assumption. It makes it harder for Trump. I mean, I would be satisfied with the debate if we emerge from it with conditions not having changed. I think it's moving Trump's way. I think the logic of the race is such that he ought to win. But I have some concerns about the debate.
Trump was saying at the town hall last night, I guess, that, you know, he's like, oh, Kamala Harris, she had notes. She had notes when she did that interview with CNN. I don't know if you've watched it, but she does look down a lot. I mean, I don't know if she somehow snuck notes in there. She's writing stuff down in her hand, but this has to be one of the first times that she's ever just had to been forced to answer off the cuff and not have the questions ahead of time.
Yeah, I watch her, and when she's under any kind of pressure, I watch her eyes and I see the stress and the fear. Now, look, there are always moments in a campaign when you kind of have to, you know, you suck in the wind a little bit because it's a little bit scary. But I see that from her in situations where it just shouldn't happen. I mean, like on a question on the tarmac or something. Like that. I remember when they asked her about how's she going to pay for her proposals, and I watched her answer the question, and there just was no confidence in it. So I don't know how she's going to do. It's obvious that they're going to put her through some intense preparation, which can be a plus and can be a negative, you know. So, look, I think if you had a cup of coffee with any of the leading Democrats in Washington and asked them, is this the person you would have picked, you know, to run to be your party's nominee, I think they would have said, well, she wouldn't have been in the top 25.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, it was what it was for them, and they've got her, and they're going to do the best they can.
There's a clip out there this morning, and I'm going to play just a little bit of it. You'll hear the translator here of Vladimir Putin supposedly claiming support for Kamala Harris. Here, listen. Here, Carl, are we up over there? All right, here we go.
It's been long since I've called any leaders of the Europe or the U.S., but we're not against any type of contacts. We're not limiting them. Yes, sometimes we exchange some kind of information using different channels, first of all, through the foreign ministry. It's not for us to determine. These are elections of the U.S. people. I said that if we can name a favorite candidate, it used to be Joe Biden, but now he is not participating in the election campaign, and he recommended all his allies to support Ms. Harris. So that is what we are going to do.
Carry any weight with anybody? I mean, that's that Russian election interference?
Just look at the record, Mark. Yeah. Okay, so Trump armed the Ukrainians and imposed strong sanctions on Nord Stream 2, which was the pipeline that was so important to the Russians, among other things. Okay, like, for example, his defense budgets, his priority of rebuilding the Navy, a whole broad range of things. Now, the Russians didn't like any of that. And we don't have to be, you know, we don't have to be in Putin's head to be able to figure that out. Whereas Biden rolled over the New START treaty, a nuclear arms treaty, which the Russians wanted without any conditions. He waived the Nord Stream sanctions, and he gave, this is all in his first year, and he gave Putin a summit without conditions, not to mention what he's done with the defense budget and defense establishment in general. So, I mean, look, if you look at the record, who's the stronger president? You know, who moves more effectively to protect American interests? I mean, it was Trump.
Yes.
That's why we have the wars we have today and why I'm so concerned about a war in the Indo-Pacific, no matter what happens, but especially if she's the president.
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah, he'd much rather deal with Kamala Harris than Donald Trump. Jim, we appreciate your thoughts as always. Great, great perspective.
You guys are welcome.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Call from my son. He said, "Hey, Dad, you remember that dinosaur tooth you got me from Morocco? Mark Cox has got one as well. Enjoy your day."
I will. Thank you for that.
But does he have the official letter of authenticity like you received?
I'm sure he does, just like I received. So I don't know why you're doubting me on this. I mean,
what guy took the time to write up that letter in his basement and print it?
A Moroccan prince.
And all I had to do was send him $784, yeah, and then he's going to send me millions at some point.
You had to give him gift cards?
You doubters. My grandson loves that. He does.
I believe that your grandson loves it. He doesn't care if it's an authentic dinosaur tooth, but that's what's funny about it is it's definitely not.
It is. Why do you keep saying that? Why do you keep saying that? It said right online it was real.
Mm.
Liz Cheney said it was real. It must be real.
Whoa. If Liz Cheney says it, then I've changed my mind. I believe it, Mark.
Hey, we have another call.
Oh, we do,
from
Carl.
The voice messages about Liz Cheney.
Ah, let's hear it.
Guys, let's not forget Liz Cheney's role in the January 6th investigations and the cover-up that's going on there now. If Donald Trump is elected president, all of that will be exposed.
That's a good point. I mean, I know her. You could tell even on that committee. I mean, it's one reason she got swamped in her own primary, got primaried out in Wyoming, was her just deep hatred of Donald Trump for what happened on January 6th and for lying about it on that committee and covering up evidence that they didn't like. And then they destroyed a bunch of evidence before it was over with. I mean, it's crazy what they got away with. I agree with that completely. Yeah, I don't give her any credibility. I just wanted to play the former Liz Cheney versus the Liz Cheney now, for sure. A couple other people have called in this morning as well, Carl. Didn't we have?
We have one more. Okay, so your dinosaur friend is Mark also.
Thank you, Mark.
And smart that was guy. Gary talking about Liz Cheney. And this is D. And he's calling about something we talked about in the 6 o'clock hour.
All right.
Yeah, I think that lady was a bit off her rocker. But look, when you blame video games for these kind of things happening, man, you put yourself in the same camp as these people who are blaming the guns for the violence that happened. It's just silly. You're blaming inanimate objects for evil actions. I mean, my friends grew up playing games, and none of us ever thought about shooting anybody.
Well, you know, for a long time, I made that argument about cartoons. I mean, I grew up watching Wile E. Coyote run off the edge of cliffs and then land thousands of feet below in a puff of dust. And I didn't try to go jump off a cliff because I thought that, like Wile E. Coyote, I'd be just fine, right? But there's a little difference between me watching that cartoon and portraying a character in a video game like Call of Duty. The reality factor is different. The character you are in Call of Duty, the people who are shooting at you, the people you're shooting at, the people you're physically fighting with in knife fights and all that look real. I mean, it would take some of the edge off of that situation, I think. It would take some of what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, I think it desensitizes a lot of the people who regularly play those games. It desensitizes them to the value of human life. But then on top of that, I think it glamorizes it. And I would make the same argument with pornography. Pornography is leading to a lot of issues in marriages. And you can't just blame pornography. You can't just blame video games. But do I think it's a contributing factor? Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of this goes back to mental health and other things that we need to address. And a lack of security at schools that have made them soft targets. And that's why we keep seeing this occur. Because in this case with the Georgia shooter, as soon as he was confronted by an armed school resource officer, he immediately surrendered. There was no sort of an aggressive confrontation. I mean, just imagine how different yesterday would have played out had that shooter run into the school resource officer immediately.
Immediately.
Didn't even get into the school.
That's a good point. But I'm not directly tying this school shooting to a video game at all. My point is I'm trying to determine what's different between 25 or 30 years ago when these things were not as common and now. Pharmaceutical use and all the antidepressants and the drugs and the ADHD medications and all of that that children are on, that's different. That's ramped up
100%.
Tremendously.
Yes.
In that period of time. Am I a pharmacologist and can tell you what that direct link is? No, but I know that to be a fact. That is different than it used to be. The reality factor of these video games is different than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you could, if that's true, having kids watch car accidents or be involved in a car accident in one of these video games, does that lead them to not drive as fast? I don't know. In Grand Theft Auto, you're driving as fast as you can because you got cops chasing you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying I have all of the answers, but I don't think it's the same argument that the gun is an inanimate object. The gun is an inanimate object. Somebody has to pick it up and fire it. The reason they pick it up and fire it, we can debate.
Right. I would agree.
Mental health plays a big role in that, too.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's not just video games, but you think about the content that's available to a lot of these younger kids on social media. I mean, you see videos of fights and other things, a lot of violence on social media, and I'll use the word glamorized, but that's the only way I can think of to describe it. It looked cool, and I've heard that's even become a trend where people are seeking these videos that show a lot of violence, and I think that you watch enough of that, and that just, it does something to your brain. So I think there's, you can't just say, well, this is the reason. But you have to at least, in my opinion, look at that as something that could be contributing to the change that we're seeing here over the last number of years.
Yeah, I made the mistake of watching a couple of the network newscasts this morning on the shooting. Another mass murder in America, blah, must be the gun, blah, blah, blah. And in each one of these cases, case by case by case, it's a subject where they had a warning in advance that this person was mentally unstable. In many cases, there are adults who are mentally unstable. In this case, it was a 13-year-old when they first interacted with him, who's now 14 years old, who had already threatened to do damage at a school. There's a track record there of mental illness and mental derangement leading to these shootings, and yet these kids continue to have access to weapons. And the people giving them that access need to be held responsible. I'm a responsibility guy. You have to be held responsible or this is never going to change. The mother, and I can't imagine the torture she's going through, who abandoned her children to go shopping and left a 10-year-old in charge, and now a 4-year-old is dead because she left a loaded gun where kids could get access to it. As horrible as that must be for whatever she's going through, she's directly responsible for that happening because she left that weapon unsecured. Period. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm.
The person that sold the gun to the shooter at the Gateway Academy over here should have been charged with doing that. If more people were held accountable for that, you would have less cases, because it's already illegal to sell a gun to somebody who's not allowed to have one.
Right.
This guy couldn't go through a background check and get one, so he went to this guy who was selling one privately, and he bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Call from my son. He said, "Hey, Dad, you remember that dinosaur tooth you got me from Morocco? Mark Cox has got one as well. Enjoy your day."
I will. Thank you for that.
But does he have the official letter of authenticity like you received?
I'm sure he does, just like I received. So I don't know why you're doubting me on this. I mean,
what guy took the time to write up that letter in his basement and print it?
A Moroccan prince.
And all I had to do was send him $784, yeah, and then he's going to send me millions at some point.
You had to give him gift cards?
You doubters. My grandson loves that. He does.
I believe that your grandson loves it. He doesn't care if it's an authentic dinosaur tooth, but that's what's funny about it is it's definitely not.
It is. Why do you keep saying that? Why do you keep saying that? It said right online it was real.
Mm.
Liz Cheney said it was real. It must be real.
Whoa. If Liz Cheney says it, then I've changed my mind. I believe it, Mark.
Hey, we have another call.
Oh, we do,
from
Carl.
The voice messages about Liz Cheney.
Ah, let's hear it.
Guys, let's not forget Liz Cheney's role in the January 6th investigations and the cover-up that's going on there now. If Donald Trump is elected president, all of that will be exposed.
That's a good point. I mean, I know her. You could tell even on that committee. I mean, it's one reason she got swamped in her own primary, got primaried out in Wyoming, was her just deep hatred of Donald Trump for what happened on January 6th and for lying about it on that committee and covering up evidence that they didn't like. And then they destroyed a bunch of evidence before it was over with. I mean, it's crazy what they got away with. I agree with that completely. Yeah, I don't give her any credibility. I just wanted to play the former Liz Cheney versus the Liz Cheney now, for sure. A couple other people have called in this morning as well, Carl. Didn't we have?
We had one more. Okay, so your dinosaur friend is Mark also.
Thank you, Mark.
And smart that was guy. Gary talking about Liz Cheney. And this is D. And he's calling about something we talked about in the 6 o'clock hour.
All right.
Yeah, I think that lady was a bit off her rocker. But look, when you blame video games for these kind of things happening, man, you put yourself in the same camp as these people who are blaming the guns for the violence that happened. It's just silly. You're blaming inanimate objects for evil actions. I mean, my friends grew up playing games, and none of us ever thought about shooting anybody.
Well, you know, for a long time, I made that argument about cartoons. I mean, I grew up watching Wile E. Coyote run off the edge of cliffs and then land thousands of feet below in a puff of dust. And I didn't try to go jump off a cliff because I thought that, like Wile E. Coyote, I'd be just fine, right? But there's a little difference between me watching that cartoon and portraying a character in a video game like Call of Duty. The reality factor is different. The character you are in Call of Duty, the people who are shooting at you, the people you're shooting at, the people you're physically fighting with in knife fights and all that look real. I mean, it would take some of the edge off of that situation, I think. It would take some of the what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, I think it desensitizes a lot of the people who regularly play those games. It desensitizes them to the value of human life. But then on top of that, I think it glamorizes it. And I would make the same argument with pornography. Pornography is leading to a lot of issues in marriages. And you can't just blame pornography. You can't just blame video games. But do I think it's a contributing factor? Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of this goes back to mental health and other things that we need to address. and a lack of security at schools that have made them soft targets. And that's why we keep seeing this occur, because in this case with the Georgia shooter, as soon as he was confronted by an armed school resource officer, he immediately surrendered. There was no sort of an aggressive confrontation. I mean, just imagine how different yesterday would have played out had that shooter run into the school resource officer immediately.
Immediately.
Didn't even get into the school.
That's a good point. But I'm not directly tying this school shooting to a video game at all. My point is, I'm trying to determine what's different between 25 or 30 years ago when these things were not as common and now. Pharmaceutical use and all the antidepressants and the drugs and the ADHD medications and all of that that children are on, that's different. That's ramped up
100%.
Tremendously.
Yes.
In that period of time. Am I a pharmacologist and can tell you what that direct link is? No, but I know that to be a fact. That is different than it used to be. The reality factor of these video games is different than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you could, if that's true, having kids watch car accidents or be involved in a car accident in one of these video games, does that lead them to not drive as fast? I don't know. In Grand Theft Auto, you're driving as fast as you can because you got cops chasing you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying I have all of the answers, but I don't think it's the same argument that the gun is an inanimate object. The gun is an inanimate object. Somebody has to pick it up and fire it. The reason they pick it up and fire it, we can debate.
Right. I would agree.
Mental health plays a big role in that, too.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's not just video games, but you think about the content that's available to a lot of these younger kids on social media. I mean, you see videos of fights and other things, a lot of violence on social media. And I'll use the word glamorized, but that's the only way I can think of to describe it. It looked cool. And I've heard that's even become a trend where people are seeking these videos that show a lot of violence. And I think that you watch enough of that and that just it does something to your brain. So I think you can't just say, well, this is the reason. But you have to at least, in my opinion, look at that as something that could be contributing to the change that we're seeing here over the last number of years.
Yeah, I made the mistake of watching a couple of the network newscasts this morning on the shooting. Another mass murder in America, blah, must be the gun, blah, blah, blah. And in each one of these cases, case by case by case, it's a subject where they had a warning in advance that this person was mentally unstable. In many cases, there are adults who are mentally unstable. In this case, it was a 13-year-old when they first interacted with him, who's now 14 years old, who had already threatened to do damage at a school. There's a track record there of mental illness and mental derangement leading to these shootings, and yet these kids continue to have access to weapons. And the people giving them that access need to be held responsible. I'm a responsibility guy. You have to be held responsible or this is never going to change. The mother, and I can't imagine the torture she's going through, who abandoned her children to go shopping and left a 10-year-old in charge, and now a 4-year-old is dead because she left a loaded gun where kids could get access to it. As horrible as that must be for whatever she's going through, she's directly responsible for that happening because she left that weapon unsecured. Period. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm.
The person that sold the gun to the shooter at the Gateway Academy over here should have been charged with doing that. If more people were held accountable for that, you would have less cases because it's already illegal to sell a gun to somebody who's not allowed to have one.
Right.
This guy couldn't go through a background check and get one, so he went to this guy who was selling one privately, and he bought it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're selling a weapon privately, the responsibility is on you to make sure you're selling it to someone who's allowed to have it. And if you don't, you're breaking the law. But nobody is ever held responsible for it. And we still don't have any answers from the St. Louis police as to why that individual was in charge. They're like, well, that was the FBI's decision. Okay, FBI, why wasn't this guy charged?
Mm-hmm. People just need tougher consequences in general, because is that going to deter everyone? Of course not. But to me, that is what is going to clean up some of the crime issues that we're having here in the city, well, really across the country. There's just not much of a consequence for a lot of these criminals. They know they might get arrested. They're going to get a slap on the wrist and they're out. If they knew there were serious consequences, these parents who leave their guns out in the open for their children to have access to, that would, to me, serve as a deterrent. It should.
Yes, you would hope.
You would hope.
All right. Coming up, we talked about this a bit earlier. You said you want to talk about affirmative action and the Supreme Court decision that said universities can't use that. And there have been some change in the numbers.
There has been a supposed pretty sizable impact on some universities, including a big one right here in the St. Louis area.
All right, coming up in just a minute.
Kim on a whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
What kind of an impact do you think the Supreme Court striking down affirmative action has had on enrollment? Because according to this article on NBC News, it's had quite an impact. A big dip in black enrollment at some of the nation's top universities, including Washington University, right here in the St. Louis area.
Fairness.
I love that the Supreme
That's the
Court. Well, yeah, I love the fact that the Supreme Court did this, because then all of these students who were getting admitted to these top universities, they know it was because of the success they've had, whether it be academically or maybe they were there on a sports scholarship. I don't know. Whatever the case may be, they know they earned it, that it had nothing to do with their race. Do you really feel good about where you are if you know that you didn't deserve, you didn't get there because you actually truly deserve it? How do you feel good about that?
Well, you shouldn't, but you quoted, you talked to me about a student who was quoted as saying she was concerned about getting into Yale when she was told that her race would not be a factor. Because although she's a good student, she was pretty sure that was going to give her a leg up.
Right. So she did get into Yale, but when this Supreme Court decision came down, she said she cried. She said, she is black, by the way. She said, without affirmative action, I felt so uncertain about how my college decision was going to go. It made me decide to change my strategy a little bit. And she began to think about ways to highlight her race in the application process. Bingo, right there. That's what's going to happen. These students are going to find some way to make sure that they let these colleges know, oh, by the way, I'm black, just so you know.
Yeah.
In a little subtle way, because they're still going to find ways to check those diversity boxes.
And they will try to do end runs around it. You know these woke administrations will. And again, I want to point out, it shouldn't be a black or white issue. But here's the equity argument again. It's not about an equal opportunity. So if you put me in a foot race against a 23-year-old who's been running track all year, I'm going to get my butt dusted. Even if you give me a 30-yard, let me move up 30 yards to start the race, there's still a chance I'm going to end up losing. But you're trying to offset that by giving me that 30 yards, right? That's not fair. If I'm in a foot race with you, let's start it at the beginning and see who wins. Equity is about making sure you get that extra 50-yard head start.
Right.
Because it's not fair if not. Well, who determines fairness? What's important here is that this is not a black or white issue. This lawsuit was brought originally by Asian students who weren't getting into these top colleges at the rate they should have been based on their test scores, right? And their grades and their accomplishments. They were being pushed aside because of the equity argument. Well, we have enough of you, we need more of them, which is complete garbage, because that shouldn't even be a consideration. That's all the Supreme Court said.
Right. Just to give you an idea of the dip in enrollment, MIT is saying that about 5% of its incoming class for this school year is black, compared with the typical 13% in recent years. Amherst College in Massachusetts also says it had a big dip. It says black students made up about 11% of the incoming class for last year, compared to 3% this year. I mentioned Washington University here in St. Louis. They've had about a 4% dip, specifically in black enrollment. And this student who I mentioned earlier, who's a freshman at Yale and was devastated about the Supreme Court decision, she's like, yeah, I really value diversity and I want to make sure that I'm going to a college that's diverse. You're still going to have diversity. You're just going to have diversity knowing that all of those students earned that spot. I celebrate diversity too, but not at the expense of somebody getting the position or the spot in a university when they don't deserve it. And that means somebody who did deserve it
but
wasn't able to get
you
in.
You can apply this to every public corporation in America right now. They've all got those boxes they check. And they all push for diversion, equity, inclusion. They pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to name people. The school districts do it too. The director of equity and inclusion diversity. You know it's happening. It's happening everywhere. And it shouldn't be allowed to happen. This whole idea that you have to manipulate the system to make it fair might have been a thing at some point in the past. It's not a thing anymore. Right now, it's just cheating.
What is encouraging to me is I've seen a number of companies, including Harley-Davidson and most recently Lowe's, who have come out and made changes to their DEI policies. In fact, what was it, Mizzou?
Because they were going broke.
Right. Wasn't it Mizzou that also made changes? One of them, I thought it was Mizzou, made changes to some of the DEI policies.
They should
whatever
have.
The case may be, I am slowly starting to see some of these companies who are getting rid of these because they're realizing it's not working.
The University of Kentucky announced that last week. We had the soundbite, but it was too long and I ended up playing it. But yeah, just something to food for thought. Maybe there's a little bit of a necessary readjustment here. And I'm sure somebody's going to scream, it's not fair. More fair than it was, for sure. Coming up, we'll talk to Shannon Bream. Love to get her thoughts on the town hall meeting last night with former President Trump. And then our buddy Griff Jenkins is joining us at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com. Kim on a whim.
Kim on a whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
What kind of an impact do you think the Supreme Court striking down affirmative action has had on enrollment? Because according to this article on NBC News, it's had quite an impact. A big dip in black enrollment at some of the nation's top universities, including Washington University, right here in the St. Louis area.
Fairness.
I love that the Supreme
That's the
Court.
Impact well,
yeah, I love the fact that the Supreme Court did this because then all of these students who were getting admitted to these top universities, they know it was because of the success they've had, whether it be academically or maybe they were there at a sports scholarship. I don't know. Whatever the case may be, they know they earned it. That it had nothing to do with their race. Do you really feel good about where you are if you know that you didn't deserve? You didn't get there because you actually truly deserve it. How do you feel good about that?
Well, you shouldn't, but you quoted, you talked to me about a student who was quoted as saying she was concerned about getting into Yale when she was told that her race would not be a factor. Because although she's a good student, she was pretty sure that was going to give her a leg up.
Right. So she did get into Yale, but when this Supreme Court decision came down, she said she cried. She said, she is black, by the way. She said, without affirmative action, I felt so uncertain about how my college decision was going to go. It made me decide to change my strategy a little bit. And she began to think about ways to highlight her race in the application process. Bingo, right there. That's what's going to happen. These students are going to find some way to make sure that they let these colleges know, oh, by the way, I'm black, just so you know.
Yeah.
In a little subtle way, because they're still going to find ways to check those diversity boxes.
And they will try to do end runs around it. You know these
you know
woke
they
administrations
will.
Just, and again, I want to point out, it shouldn't be a black or white issue. But here's the equity argument again. It's not about an equal opportunity. So if you put me in a foot race against a 23-year-old who's been running track all year, I'm going to get my butt dusted. Even if you give me a 30-yard, you know, let me move up 30 yards to start the race, there's still a chance I'm going to end up losing. But you're trying to offset that by giving me that 30 yards, right? That's not fair. If I'm in a foot race with you, let's start at the beginning and see who wins. Equity is about making sure you get that extra 50-yard head start.
Right.
Because it's not fair if not. Well, who determines fairness? What's important here is that this is not a black or white issue. This lawsuit was brought originally by Asian students who weren't getting into these top colleges at the rate they should have been based on their test scores, right? And their grades and their accomplishments. They were being pushed aside because of the equity argument. Well, we have enough of you. We need more of them, mm-hmm. which is complete garbage because that shouldn't even be a consideration. That's all the Supreme Court said.
Right. Just to give you an idea of the dip in enrollment, MIT is saying that about 5% of its incoming class for this school year is black, compared with the typical 13% in recent years. Amherst College in Massachusetts also says it had a big dip. It says black students made up about 11% of the incoming class for last year, compared to 3% this year. I mentioned Washington University here in St. Louis. They've had about a 4% dip, specifically in black enrollment. And this student who I mentioned earlier, who's a freshman at Yale and was devastated about the Supreme Court decision, she's like, yeah, I really value diversity and I want to make sure that I'm going to a college that's diverse. You're still going to have diversity. You're just going to have diversity knowing that all of those students earned that spot. I celebrate diversity too, but not at the expense of somebody getting the position or the spot in a university when they don't deserve it. And that means somebody who did deserve it
but
wasn't able to get
you
in.
You can apply this to every public corporation in America right now. They've all got those boxes they check. And they all push for diversion, equity, inclusion. They pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to name people. The school districts do it too. The director of equity and inclusion and you know, diversity. You know it's happening. It's happening everywhere. And it shouldn't be allowed to happen. This whole idea that you have to manipulate the system to make it fair might have been a thing at some point in the past. It's not a thing anymore. Right now, it's just cheating.
What is encouraging to me is I've seen a number of companies, including Harley-Davidson and most recently Lowe's, who have come out
yes.
and made changes to their DEI policies. In fact, what was it, Mizzou?
Because they were going broke.
Right. Wasn't it Mizzou that also made changes? One of them, I thought it was Mizzou. Made changes to some of the DEI policies. Whatever the case may be, I am slowly starting to see some of these companies who are getting rid of these because they're realizing it's not working.
The University of Kentucky announced that last week. We had the soundbite, but it was too long, and I ended up playing it. But yeah, just something to food for thought. Maybe there's a little bit of a necessary readjustment here, and I'm sure somebody's going to scream, "It's not fair." More fair than it was, for sure. Coming up, we'll talk to Shannon Bream. Love to get her thoughts on the town hall meeting last night with former President Trump. And then our buddy Griff Jenkins is joining us at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.